news, reviews, commentary, not just another podcast
on the Ordinary Pickleball Podcast.
Here's another soft name for a boy, Kyle. Soft names make soft people.
Now here comes your host, Kyle Abear, and all the world sees.
Welcome to the Big Ball Broadcast, episode 76. All the geeky news that you can use, whether it's tech, animation, movies, TV, toys, or randomness, you're going to find it here. We're part of thegeekmedia.com and are brought to you by fastfoodanime.com. My name is Kyle Abear. I'm a voice actor living in Los Angeles. You can hear me as Thomas Mason on Soldier of Fortune Payback for Xbox 360, PS3, and also Teen Gohan, PyCon, and the narrator on Dragon Ball Z Budokai Tenkaichi 3 for PS2 and the Wii.
And this is your co-host, Otherworld Steve. I'm a musician living in New England. Check out my latest project, Perimeter of the Void, at myspace.com/perimeterofthevoid.
This week, we're talking about video games. We got some new maps out for Halo 3 for a price. Wii is going to have some wireless nunchuck action. How cool is that? Sony's Christmas gift for PS3.
There's another soft name for a boy, Kyle. Soft names make soft people.
Batman in the Terminator. The Real World meets Dragon Ball. X-Files 2 goes gangsta rap. Plus casting rumors on Justice League and Wolverine. Plus our little commentary. And we got links on the blog page here for Speed Racer and Prince Caspian trailers. In tech, Michael Bay is going on a rant, a little conspiracy theory about the state of Blu-ray and HD DVD. Nokia announces some new gadgets. And in the random department, we talk about Family Guy trading cards. Naruto scoring high with Yahoo! And a holiday warning to our pot-smoking audience who lives at home. We have pot-smoking audience members, you think?
I'm sure we do, although much like the anime piracy thing, I don't think many people will be emailing or calling with the truth.
Probably not. Almost a tie-in, though, is our first email from Cyberlink 420. Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Yeah, you can send your email to thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. Cyberlink 420 says, "Hey guys, I just recently got into your podcast. I've been listening to it every week since." Thank you very much, Cyberlink. "It's definitely one of my favorites of all the shows I listen to, and believe me, there's a lot of them. Kudos to you. Since you guys are, of course, one of the ultimate sources for all things geeky, you guys are probably just as hyped for the upcoming Super Smash Bros. Brawl as the rest of us. My question is, out of all the daily announcements made on the site, what are you looking forward to the most? Any particular characters or features? Thanks, guys, and keep being awesome." I've never played Super Smash Bros. Melee, but I am looking forward to this one because, you know, it's new, it's for the Wii, and it probably has every, you know, character known to man on there. So in terms of specific characters, I don't know. I wish they would just get the, you know, it's a licensing nightmare, but the whole Shonen Jump All-Stars and all that stuff, if you could have, you know, all the anime stuff like One Piece, Naruto, and Dragon Ball Z, throw them in there, I think that'd be awesome, but it's not going to happen. But you do have Sonic. You do have Solid Snake. I think those are some interesting characters of note. How about you, Steve?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely those two. Sonic was an intense rumor for a long time. And when it was confirmed, I know it really blew a lot of people away. I actually like the way they're handling the Pokemon aspect in this game. In the last game, there weren't any... Well, there were playable Pokemon characters. There was... Pikachu and Paiku, but this time around you actually play as a Pokemon trainer, and you get to select from different Pokemon that you use during battle. From what I understand, the trainer himself can't fight. He has to rely on the Pokeballs and which Pokemon he summons up. But on a whole, the game looks incredibly interesting. There's so much to cover that if I told you everything that I liked about it, it would be a show unto itself. But I love the fact that you can play online. That's freaking awesome. That's something, you know, Kyle and I go off about on every podcast. I wish all these games were online. Well, our wish came true with this. Really looking forward to the ability to make your own stages, and then you get to put them up on whatever the Nintendo Wi-Fi live connection thingy is, and other people can play your stages, and the Nintendo will select a stage that gets uploaded once a day and make that stage available for everybody, not just people on your friends list. It's a very, very cool thing. Really looking forward to it. I can tell you that the release date is February 10th, 2008, so we have plenty more time to talk about it, and I'm sure as we get closer to the release, we'll have a lot more to say on the podcast about it.
Wow, this is the first time I've actually heard about that feature, about customizing stages. That's kind of like the Forge feature in Halo 3, but kind of taking it to the next level, where you got the company going, okay, we're going to make this available for everybody, and, you know, kind of like a contest, I guess.
Kind of. You know, I don't know if it's just going to be random or if they're actually going to check them out, but pretty cool that the stage you make could be the featured download for the day for the game. Another really cool thing, too, is music selection for each stage. So, again, there's just so much out there that should truly make this a kick-ass game, and I know we'll be talking a lot more about this.
Yep. I second Steve on the motion, on the notion, rather, that... you know, you'd be able to play online. It's just a must-have. We're spoiled by it from, you know, the games over the past few years. It's kind of trickled down, and then Xbox Live is like the force to beat in terms of getting online and playing your friends with games. And when you buy a new game for a different system and you can't play online, there's a significant disappointment factor, at least for me. If you don't have that, then, and you mentioned the music feature. On 360, a lot of games now will let you have custom soundtracks. I just was able to stream my music library from my PC to my 360. So if I'm playing Halo, I can customize the playlist. I mean, this is something that's been available for a long time. This is just now the first time I've been able to do it, and it's just an awesome feature.
Yeah, I haven't got there quite yet, but now that you and I have discussed it, I think I'm going to go ahead and give that a shot one of these days.
Yeah, and if you could do that with Super Smash Brothers, you know, if you're importing and streaming your music from your PC to your Wii...
Well, I don't know if it's to that degree. I know you can select, I think, from the available songs. I don't know if you can actually import material.
Okay.
Don't know.
While we're talking about games here, we did get a nice MP3 review for Call of Duty 4 from Dante. Let's give that a listen.
Hi there everyone, this is Dante bringing you the review of Call of Duty 4 Modern Combat for the Big Bald Broadcast. Now, the story of Call of Duty 4 actually takes place from a couple different viewpoints. You have the US Marines, and then you have the British SAS on one side. Basically, there's a Middle Eastern madman trying to throw over a country, help from the Russians. This is basically your typical subwar movie plot. But that's not why we play first-person shooters. We play it for the graphics, we play it for the gameplay, and of course, like Halo, we play it for the multiplayer. Graphically, Call of Duty 4, whether it be PC, 360, or PS3, absolutely is one of the most beautiful games of the season. The sound, though, that is a little bit more lacking. The voice acting is great. Some of the same things that the SAS or the Marines will say as you're fighting, giving away hints. Occasionally you'll get stuck and you'll hear one of your squad mates go, "We need to go over here," or "There's a patrol coming, we better stay back." Other than the voiceovers, the gun sound effects are what you would typically expect from a video game like this, and the music is very much the same. And now we get to my personal favorite part of the game, and probably everyone else's favorite part, multiplayer. Multiplayer in Call of Duty 4 is very similar to how it's been in the past three games, except for now you have this perk system. Perks are basically attributes that you earn by ranking up throughout the game, but it is addicting. You really do want to play that extra hour because you just want to get that much higher of a rank. And this is what keeps the game from getting boring. Basically, you can have so many different combinations of classes and abilities and weapons that, depending on the map type, you could change what you're doing per round. Basically, it comes down to it lets you play the game how you really want to. Overall, Call of Duty 4 is one of the best games of the season. Go out and buy it when you have a chance. Don't worry about renting it. This is a buy.
All right. Thank you very much, Dante. He says buy it, which I did recently after playing at a friend's house and didn't play online, actually. I played the single-player campaign, and it was it's really intense. It's addictive. It's cool. The graphics are beautiful, like he was saying, and I'm normally not into military shooters because, you know, the Call of Duty series – you know, really did bank in on the whole World War II thing, and it just got old. It's like they all start to look the same. But this one, set in modern times, and obviously, you know, I don't know. I've never been a member of the military. I'm assuming they did the research, and this is pretty accurate to what warfare would be like, the jargon, the lingo, the dialogue, the acting, the weaponry, and certainly the environments. They're really intense, and this game is a whole lot of fun. It's not the same thing as Halo. It's not even the same kind of beast, but if you're kind of on the fence about it, I'm gonna give my support for Call of Duty 4.
I will say this. My only exposure to the game so far has been the review on XPlay, and after watching about 10 minutes or so of actual gameplay, I said to myself, why am I still playing Halo?
You know, there are people out there going, you know, there's got to be something better than Halo, and it's just a matter of time.
It looks absolutely gorgeous, and like you said, it looks, you know, very, very intense, and I think that's where the allure is with me. I really want something that, you know, keeps you moving, keeps you, you know, ducking and firing undercover. It looks really badass, so I don't know. Might have to put it on my Christmas wish list.
It's a different dynamic. You know, when I'm playing Halo, just myself personally, I prefer kind of getting on with my friends and kind of making it more of a social laid-back sort of thing. Even though you're running around in the game killing each other, I like a laid-back vibe. It's almost impossible to be too laid-back in Call of Duty 4 because it is warfare. You know, it's set in the real world, so it's got a whole different vibe about it. And if you're playing online or if you're just playing one or two people, you really do have to use that whole stealth aspect. Not so much with Halo where you can just run around and bounce around and just shoot people. You don't necessarily have to take the sniper angle, but you do have to consider that more so when you're doing the gameplay in Call of Duty.
I wish it wasn't so late right now. I'd run out and pick it up right now.
Oh, man. Well, put it on your to-do list, Steve, and we'll have to play each other.
Definitely.
Other things out there. Halo 3, speaking of. Let's get into the news here. Halo 3, right now on Xbox Live, you can pick up the Heroic Map Pack. There are three. Count them. 1, 2, 3. Standoff, Foundry, and Rat's Nest. These are three maps available for download. It's not for free, though. Not till springtime, anyway. Right now, it'll cost you 800 Microsoft points. And you're going, well, how much is that? Okay, that's $10. A little steep for only three maps, but you can either wait till spring, or if you're a hardcore Halo addict, you want to play with your friends, chances are everyone's going to be downloading this like crazy. I know I will.
And therein lies the bitch with updates like this, because I haven't played a lot of Halo online. So if you go and download the new maps tonight, and then you say, hey, Steve, I know you got some free time, let's go play some Halo. And, you know, being new, of course, everybody's going to want these new maps. And you're going to go, well, gee, I guess you can't play because you don't have the new maps. And it's like, oh, shit, now I'm back in the corner. Better pull out my credit card and spend the $10 because now everybody's playing on the new maps and you don't want to play the old maps anymore because everybody's burned out on them since the game came out.
How's that for marketing?
Yeah, it's a lose-lose for me and a win-win for Microsoft.
So you going to cave in?
Again, I don't think I have much of a choice.
Well, how about this? Gran Turismo 4. If you go to Game Trailers, and we're going to stick this link on our show notes, so check it out, the new trailer for Gran Turismo 4. I've only seen a little footage from it. I don't really keep up with the series anymore. I couldn't get into it, really. The only thing I really liked about the game was kind of like the free-roaming aspect and then changing the channel on the radio. That was about it.
You can go in your car and change the channel on the radio. That's free.
I don't need a video game to do that.
When it comes to car games, not necessarily racing games, but when it comes to car games, the one I'm really excited about is Burnout Paradise coming out in January. That is the driving game that I must own for next year.
Amen, brother, because we got so much fun out of Burnout Revenge. The whole Burnout series, ever since Xbox, has been incredible. That whole dynamic of damaging each other's cars and crashing for points just blows any other just normal racer out of the water.
Agreed, because I just love the crash scenarios. Oh, that, do $12 million worth of damage. I'm like, oh, I'm up for that.
Exactly, and each game, of course, amps it up graphically and in every way possible. So now, I'm sure Burnout Paradise, you can go to IGN and look at the new gameplay movies and everything, and it's just, oh my God, I'm just salivating.
And a throwback to last week's podcast, that is one game that I went out and bought immediately after playing the demo on Xbox Live. So, again, I love the try it before you buy it angle of the 360 because it works.
Absolutely. So let's talk about this little Christmas gift from Sony for the PS3 owners out there.
We got a rumor regarding Sony's big Christmas gift to Blu-ray aficionados. It is said that Sony's firmware update before Christmas will include profile 1.1 compatibility for Blu-ray discs. Competing format HD DVD has supported profile 1.1 since it came about, which basically supports picture-in-picture, secondary audio, and local storage. There aren't any profile 1.1 Blu-ray discs on the market yet. And a single 1.1 compatible player is on the market from Panasonic, and that's really about it. So a lot of people are saying, well, this is kind of just a bullet point for PS3 fanboys to argue about. I guess there's also Profile 2.0, but the only major feature included with that is internet connectivity. But that's not really an issue because of the PS3's built-in Ethernet jack. Sony's continuing to improve with its firmware updates, and PS3 fans and Blu-ray disc aficionados have that much more ammo to use in the never-ending format war.
That's right. HD DVD has had it since day one, and that's what their camp is going, ha-ha, to Blu-ray about. You couldn't do picture-in-picture commentary. That's something, you know, the 300 disc has that the Blu-ray doesn't. And now you've got these, Sony is amping up with this new profile that... There's only one player out there right now that can handle the most advanced disc, and it's a Panasonic brand one. But starting in the first Fox title to come out from Blu-ray with featuring this technology is going to be Sunshine, which is an independent Fox sci-fi flick that maybe not too many people saw. I caught it in the theater. It was really good, but didn't get a lot of marketing push.
Why do they always do that? They always, like, when the new formats come out and the new players come out, the first movies they release are always, like, crappy movies that nobody's ever heard of. And then they introduce new features, and the first disc to come out and have them included is, like, this crappy movie that nobody's heard about.
What are you going to do? I don't know. But hopefully they'll amp up the slate with things that more people will be consumer-friendly about.
Perhaps. Or perhaps the whole Blu-ray HD format war will blow up in everybody's face and the PS3 will be rendered relatively obsolete.
I don't know. I mean, their sales have gone up significantly since the, you know, the 40 gig and the $400 price point, which is still very, very expensive, I say. But
yeah, and I'm on the verge of making a concession. I won't do it just yet, but I'm on the verge. Because the more and more I roam around the interweb, the tubes, it seems that Blu-ray is going to kind of be the front runner, I guess.
Yeah, there's articles online that I haven't read, but you know, the studios are trying to woo Warner Brothers, which is one major studio that currently puts out movies on both formats. And if they choose one over the other, that could significantly, you know, bring us closer to the end of this.
Yeah, and again, you know, price point is everything, and you know, Sony's sales of the PS3 have skyrocketed since the price drop. And I don't know, maybe mid-next year, if we see another significant price drop on the PS3, that could be the be-all, end-all.
Yeah, because, you know, it is a gaming console, but it's also a high-def player. A lot of players will buy it for one reason or the other or both. So the market penetration is there. If you've got all these PS3s going into consumer households for the holiday season thanks to this price cut, then you've got a fan base there of Blu-ray owners, like it or not, whether they care or not, they have Blu-ray players, and the sales figures speak for themselves.
And also, let's not forget, with the big push for Blu-ray, there's always been that, you know, five-movie incentive. Go out and buy a Blu-ray player, get five movies for free. So that certainly doesn't hurt them at all.
That's right. It's just going back and forth, you know. Some they have the rumors about the Chinese sticking out cheap HD DVD players and selling them at Walmart, and you know, it just goes back and forth, you know, all these incentives, you know, buy the HD add-on for the 360, which right now, by the way, I don't know if by the time you're listening to this show, but right now, as of the recording of this, you can go to Toys R Us or Amazon.com and pick up the HD add-on for the 360 for dirt cheap, like $130.
Which is a much, much, much cheaper alternative to the PS3. But, you know, it's that caveat, you know, you got to have the 360. And if you don't have a 360, then you're kind of pushing it towards the PS3 price point, and I'd say at that point, get a PS3 if you're buying a console because you want to watch movies. If you're buying a console because you want to play games and also have the ability to watch nice movies, then definitely get the 360 with the HD add-on.
Yeah, there you go. If you're a Wii owner, you'll be happy to hear that Nyko is bringing a new peripheral out. Yeah, wireless nunchucks. It's exactly the same as Nintendo's nunchuck, except without the wire. And it actually has its own wrist strap. No price or release date announced yet, but they will have those details at the next CES, which is the Consumer Electronics Show convention.
Pretty cool. Another nice thing to look forward to with the Wii.
Yeah, because I'm spoiled by wireless connectivity. I know when I got my Wii, I saw the classic NES controller, and I said, do I want to buy it? It only has like a 2-foot cable or something ridiculous. I like sitting. I'm a good 10, 12 feet away from my TV, so I went out and sought a wireless GameCube controller, you know?
I like the look of the classic controller, but I know a lot of people are complaining online. It just doesn't feel right in their hands.
Yeah.
I don't know what the solution to that problem is.
Yeah, that's true.
I hate the GameCube controller. I hate it. I despise it.
Well, what about the whole nunchuck thing? Do you ever find it kind of cumbersome when you're sitting there with the Wiimote and the nunchuck and you try
to
set it down, and then one falls off the edge of the dinner tray and then it pulls the other end off?
Well, I can't say I've had that experience, but when I play Wii, I think I purposely only play games that just use the Wiimote. The nunchuck is, I don't know, it's added difficulty.
It is, and you need it for certain games like this Tenkaichi 3, which I've heard, unfortunately, there's a lot of lag on the online play, so not looking forward to that. And then I'm still not used to having to use the nunchuck and the Wiimote for punches and all that stuff.
Yeah, I had my fill with the nunchuck just on Wii Sports with boxing, and I was like, no, I'll stick to the ones that just use the one-handed Wiimote.
You are listening to the Big Ball Broadcast. When we come back, we're going to talk about Speed Racer, Prince Caspian trailers. They're out there. We've got info about trading cards for Family Guy. Michael Bay chimes in about the whole high-def war. Nokia's got some new gadgets. And a holiday warning to anyone who likes to smoke pot in their own parents' house. All this and more coming up on the Big Ball Broadcast.
Come on, say it.
Hey, man, that gecko won't talk like the one on TV.
Yeah, but with radio, no one can see it dance.
And that little dance won't help you save 15% on your car insurance.
Aha, but it could save me 25% on my anime.
What are you babbling about, man?
FastFoodAnime.com could save you 25% on your anime. From DVDs and manga to soundtracks, plushies to Japanese snacks, I buy everything from FastFoodAnime.com.
Nice. You know geckos can't dance, right?
FastFoodAnime.com.
Order! Order, I say! We'll never get anywhere if you all keep talking out of turn!
But, sir, all we want to know is where to go to hear our favorite animation voice actors talk about their careers!
Yeah, that's right! And for them to give us budding voice performers advice on how to get into the business.
Darn right, Mr. Meyer! We all just love them cartoons so god darn much! We all go to conventions and listen to them voice actors talk! We can't wait to hear them talk about working in the business!
All right! You all know that VoicePrint with Trevor Duvall and guests is the place to go to hear some of animation's hottest voice actors talk about the business. If they were a voice in it, they'll discuss it. Anime, prelay, video games, any and all voice work they do is up for discussion.
This VoicePrint with Trevor Duvall and guests, how do we download it, huh?
Ah, that's the easy part. Just go to www.trevordeval.com. You'll find all the latest episodes there.
Liven! What if we want to subscribe to it?
VoicePrint with Trevor Duvall and guests is located on iTunes and Podcast Alley. It's really very simple, people. It's like he's bringing the convention to your iPod. Look, don't make me come down there and use this gavel.
VoicePrint with Trevor Duvall and guests, an internet talk show starring some of animation's biggest voice actors. Go to www.trevordeval.com or subscribe on iTunes or Podcast Alley.
Welcome back to the Big Ball Broadcast, episode 76. We are sitting here talking about all sorts of geeky stuff. Let's move into the realm of movies. We've got buttloads of casting news. Kick us off, Steve.
Well, if you're going to say it properly, it's ass loads.
All right, ass loads. We got ass loads.
And it's all crazy. Let's start with probably the craziest casting decisions of them all. This in regards to the long rumored X-Files movie, the second X-Files movie, should I say. This one just hurts to talk about. A gangster rapper and a foul-mouthed Scottish comedian are hardly the first people who spring to mind when you think of the X-Files, but in one of this year's strangest casting decisions, Exhibit and Billy Connolly have signed up to star in the new celluloid incarnation of the series. Exhibit will partner up with Amanda Peet to play a pair of FBI agents opposed to David Duchovny's Mulder and Gillian Anderson's Scully. It's not clear at this point what role Connolly has, though his involvement will doubtless revolve around some comic relief. Story-wise, the plot is being kept as secure as an alien lockdown in Area 51, although the film will be a standalone feature rather than a direct sequel to either the TV series or the 1998 movie.
Well, what did you think about the first X-Files movie?
I really liked it. And the reason I really liked it is because it took place during the television series continuity. The season ended on a cliffhanger, and the movie continued from that point. But the movie, I don't know, what made the movie rough was you had to know the history going into it. A lot of people say, oh, well, it was a standalone movie, blah, 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 blah. Nah, that wasn't the case because you had to know, there was too much history going on. You had to understand what was going on for it to make sense. And then when the new season started, it picked up right where the movie ended. So that was important. When it comes to this movie, here's my concerns. When they used comedy in the television series, it was a great departure from what was going on, and it kind of gave the fans a chance to catch their breath before diving headlong back into the supernatural and paranormal aspects of the show. Within the confines of this movie, especially given the fact that it's standalone and doesn't have any ties to the history of either the television show or the prior movie, it really makes me feel like it's going to be more like Rush Hour than classic Mulder and Scully.
Mm-hmm. And I'm also concerned, since the show has been long done, that, you know, kind of like a Star Trek movie, it's only going to speak to fans of the show and not the mainstream audience. You know, I'm sure the movie, I enjoyed the first movie too, and I think it did a really good job, as best as it could, you know, given the history of the show. I mean, sure, there's moments in there that it's like, oh, I really wish they're, you know, who are these lone gunmen guys? You know, they didn't even, I don't think they even referred to them as the lone gunmen in the movie, right?
I don't recall. It's been a while since I've watched the movie.
Yeah.
But it only serves to further my point that you had to know what was going on. And that's something that they feel they want to correct here. Especially, like you said, so much time has passed since the series has concluded that you know, a lot of people may not have seen it, the younger generation. So going in, they don't want to have to go out and buy, you know, 8 or 9 seasons on DVD to catch up just to understand what's going on with this one movie. But the comedy aspect, introducing what I look at as like R2-D2 and C-3PO to get a few chuckles, I'm already shaking my head. I don't know if they can come up with a story strong enough to really capture my attention and interest and still deal with, you know, horrific one-liners.
Yeah, now it's probably safe to assume that Billy Connolly, being a stand-up comedian all these years, he would be the comedic aspect of it. The thing that really kind of is out of left field is like, let's stick Exhibit in there. Let's like, why are we going to stick a hardcore gangster rapper in there? Are we going to cast him against type and give him something that you wouldn't expect him to do? Maybe the guy has acting chops. I don't know. Or is he going to go and just play himself?
I really don't know. This has fans all across the internet just really scratching their heads, because what usually happens is they, you know, they'll drop names for movies for casting, but they really don't say like in what context. So until we figure out the context, I'm just going to continue to sit here and roll my eyes.
And when does X-Files 2 come out in theaters, supposedly?
I can guess and say maybe sometime next year. I don't know.
Yeah, we still got to get that writer's strike all finished.
I know both David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson have been talking about this for a long time, and so much time passed that people said this is never going to happen. So just the fact that it's going to happen was enough to kind of make me scratch my head. But with the new casting decisions, I'm more excited about seeing Prince Caspian than this.
Ah, yes. We're gonna comment on that coming up after a while. We'll talk about the trailers for Caspian and Speed Racer. Now, some casting news that does make sense, and I think fans will breathe a sigh of relief for, is this G.I. Joe live action. Now, to recap, Stephen Sommers, who directed the Mummy films and Van Helsing, is tapped to be the director for G.I. Joe. Sienna Miller, last seen in Stardust, has been announced as attached to the project, possibly as Baroness, the exotic evil sidekick of Destro. And apparently this one is confirmed. This one, people are going, okay, this is cool. Ray Park, best known as Darth Maul and also Toad from the first X-Men film, will be playing Snake Eyes. Snake Eyes is one of the original members of the G.I. Joe series. Hasbro has released over 30 action figures of the character since his debut in 1982. Not much is known about this Ninja Master's real identity, as it's remained classified throughout the series. The U.S. Army Sergeant First Class E7 is known for his stealth-like movements and extensive knowledge of multiple forms of martial arts. Snake Eyes is romantically involved with fellow G.I. Joe member Master Sergeant Shauna M. O'Hara, a.k.a. Scarlet.
Snake Eyes is definitely one of the most badass characters in the G.I. Joe universe. As for Ray, poor Ray, you know, he hasn't been getting a lot of work lately. Nothing really since Toad and the X-Men, and who really cared about that? Nothing even remotely noticeable since his iconic depiction of Darth Maul in The Phantom Menace, so yay to Rey, I say. However, as always, Otherworld Steve's hairy butt. I really, really hope the decision to use Rey Park as Snake Eyes stays true to the character, meaning I hope that Snake Eyes remains masked and muted throughout the entire duration of the film. None of this Spider-Man Venom bullshit where, you know, you're paying Sactor a lot of money so we gotta see his face. Snake Eyes is iconic because they've never shown his face and you never hear him speak, so I'm really hoping that they can at least keep that part intact. But then again, you know, to say all of that and again say, you know, Ray Park, I don't know. You're never going to know it's Ray Park unless somebody tells you, or if you knew, you know, ahead of time going in.
Yeah, well, I mean, the guy is well known, but it's not for his acting prowess, you know, his martial arts skills, so... That's where the casting thing sounds like it makes sense. It's like, obviously, he can handle the part.
Yeah, again, I really, really, really hope the mask stays on and the mouth stays shut.
I'm sure he would wish differently, but if anyone who's met or heard Ray Park speak, it's not the type of voice you want coming out of an iconic character like that.
Yeah, actually, the very, very, very little dialogue he had in The Phantom Menace was redubbed, so when you hear Darth Maul speak, that is not Ray Park's voice.
Yeah, it cracks me up. I forget the actor's name, but he's like a voiceover guy. And then he appeared on screen as a really funny character in Shaun of the Dead. And that was pretty funny.
I'll have to go through the archives. I know a while back you actually interviewed him, Kyle, at a con. And I'll see if I can dig up that audio and we can include a little snippet in the podcast and kind of share with our listeners why he doesn't really have the best voice for these action roles.
Very nice man, though. Very, very nice, and very good at what he does. All right, let's talk about some casting rumors here on Justice League and Wolverine.
Yes, more Justice League casting rumors. 27-year-old Adam Brody is going from the Land of Women to the Hall of Justice, as the former television star has closed negotiations to play the Flash in George Miller's Justice League of America movie. This is coming to us from the LA Times. The version of the Flash seen in JLA will be Wally West, nephew to the original Flash, Barry Allen, whose death is rumored to actually open up the flick. And what does this mean for poor Ryan Reynolds, who I guess apparently was up for the role? It means almost certainly that his dream of playing the Flash is all but dead. David Dobkin, who previously revealed to MTV News that his upcoming spinoff would exist in the Justice League universe, pretty much confirms that Adam Brody has signed on for other flicks, like standalone flicks outside of JLA, so all those rumors about Reynolds seem pretty dead. And when contacted for comment by MTV, a Warner Brothers representative echoed sentiments made earlier to the Times, saying that the film hasn't even been greenlit. So, a little bit of casting controversy here, when some people are saying, yeah, so-and-so got cast, and the studio is going, what are you talking about? We haven't even approved this film yet.
Oh, great. So here we are talking about we couldn't even verify if it's live action, if it's CG or, you know, kind of like Beowulf or it's motion captured. Nobody seems to know much of anything. So, yeah, the rumor mill is spinning like crazy.
I think because there's dark and shady things going on in Hollywood, I think they're pushing through production in a lot of films during the writer's strike. So I think a lot of people are afraid to talk a little bit too much.
All right, well, what's happening over at Fox Studios for the Wolverine flick?
Oh, God, more horrible casting decisions. No, I shouldn't start a story like that. Well, this is according to Chud, which has been pretty reputable when it comes to casting news on the internet. And they're stating that production's reaching out to Gerard Butler of 300 fame to take on the role of Sabretooth. I'll keep my opinion to myself for a minute. But another rumor, more significant but probably more bullshit, is that director Gavin Hood wants Natalie Portman for the role of Kayla. And they're not too sure about that, the website reporting that. Who knows? And probably weirdest of all is that they're also rumoring that Deadpool will be showing up in the spinoff.
Wow. Okay.
They should get Ray Park to play Deadpool.
Yeah,
pretty
why
much the
not?
Same thing.
Same role, yeah. Back to Ray Park, I forgot to mention that there's this character, I forgot his name though, in Hellboy. Remember that guy? He kind of looks like Snake Eyes. The robotic dead soldier guy.
That... Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't know his name.
I forgot it. Oh, and I love Hellboy, and I went and forgot that. But oops.
Oops.
Oh, well, someone can chime in and remind me, or I'll just check online later.
So what do you think of half-naked Spartans portraying giant mutants?
Okay, it does not sound like a good fit. Now, Gerard Butler owned that role in 300. There's no doubt. He is great in that. He has since then been rumored to be attached to the Escape from New York remake. He has since pulled out. Creative differences. I'm fine with that. That movie shouldn't be touched anyway.
Well, not to interrupt, but my understanding is that that project is pretty dead in the water right now.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah.
Who would ever thought you'd yay. You killed the franchise. Awesome.
Finally. Yeah. No, that's good. It's like, can we leave enough alone? Let's quit remaking old movies and find something new. But when you got to find something that cast appropriately. I mean, come on. Gerard Butler is not Sabretooth. I mean, what's Tyler Mane, right? He played a Sabretooth in the first film.
Right. You know, and I know a lot of people going into the first X flick were kind of on the fence on that casting decision, but I certainly agree that you need somebody of stature to play a role like Sabretooth. You need somebody who's, like, really tall and massively built. And, you know, I guess I can concede and say, yeah, I guess you can go to the professional wrestlers and offer them roles like that, but with Butler, there's only two ways I can see this working. And one is to shoot with some incredibly creative camera angles to give him that perception that he's a lot bigger than what he is. Or to mocap him and end up doing it with CG. But then, you know, if that's the case, then why even bother hiring somebody of such notoriety if you're just going to mocap him? I really don't know how this is going to work out. I don't think they're going to get Natalie Portman attached to an X-Men spinoff. I just don't see that as a film for her to be excited to sign on about.
Yeah, that just sounds like fans kind of daydreaming and fantasizing about, oh, I want to see this person in this movie.
Right. And, of course, with the internet, it gets rather difficult to separate fact from fiction.
Completely. But this one apparently is fact, although it sounds like fiction. Batman and the Terminator, what do they have in common? Well, apparently, Mr. Christian Bale himself will be playing John Connor in Terminator 4, which is called Terminator Salvation, The Future Begins. The director is McGee, who did both Charlie's Angels movies. An interview in a recent issue of Entertainment Weekly says the film's producers have the utmost confidence in McGee's vision as a director and that Christian Bale doesn't choose his roles lightly. His endorsement of the script and signing on should be taken as a good sign that we'll be seeing good things with the next installment in the franchise. So playing the older version of John Connor, Christian Bale, the plot synopsis goes a little something like this. He's in his 30s. He's with his soon-to-be wife, Kate Brewster, who realized they must create a resistance organization with Earth's remaining survivors against the army of robots slowly being built up by Skynet. One survivor happens to be a traitor in disguise and has a secret that nobody would ever come to suspect. Ah! Now, is there any tie-in with the upcoming Fox series that debuts in January, The Sarah Connor Chronicles? I don't think so. Not that I'm aware of. There's no casting crossover, as far as I know. Biggest question for T4 now is, will Arnie return, the Governator himself? Now, he's busy being a governor, so the producers are saying expect no more than a cameo from Arnold.
I know he's also attached in, like, a producer's capacity. I believe we reported that on a prior podcast. He's been very vocal about wanting The Rock to come in and portray the Terminator, and there hasn't been any confirmation whatsoever regarding that rumor.
Yeah, yeah. So I think Christian Bale's a fantastic actor. It does give me some more curiosity. My eyebrow is raised now. It's like, okay, well, maybe this could work.
Glad it helps you along. For me, it just makes me feel bad for Bale and his signing on to this film, because the third Terminator film was absolutely abysmal, and I don't know where they can really go from there. The story is so overplayed, and there's only one final outcome, which was kind of realized in the very first movie, so this is all prequel crap, even though it takes place in the future, which gets a little confusing. Yeah, I'm not excited at all about this.
Well, here's the reason. I mean, I'm intrigued by the producer's statements in the interview in Entertainment Weekly about Bale doesn't choose his roles lightly. I mean, how many bad films with Christian Bale can you name?
Well, I mean, I don't think you'd ever get anybody attached to the film to say, well, Bale chose this role really lightly. You know, of course, they have their reputation to look out for, so they're going to hype it as much as possible. I hope Bale goes in with the most honest of intentions, and I hope he really thinks it's a good script and the movie has potential. Just I personally, as a movie-going fan, don't see the need, let alone the potential for a film like this.
No, and I agree. I mean, T3 was completely needless. You had the second film, it ended the way it did, and there should be no more. There shouldn't be a Sarah Connor Chronicles TV series, for crying out loud. There should not be a T3, there should not be a T4, but here we are, and it's in development.
Amazingly enough, I really don't have a problem with it being a TV series, and I think that that's an okay way to keep some franchises a little alive, to kind of keep them on the heart monitor a little longer, because, you know, with television, it doesn't seem like there's that great a risk. If it sucks, it'll be canceled mid-season. To dump, and we know it's going to be a $100 million movie, easy, it just seems so much more risky. Because, again, you know, I don't want to go off on my big rant about creating new things from the old and do we really have to keep revisiting these stupid properties. Just based on the story alone, I can't even justify a reason for this film.
Well, speaking of revisiting old properties, as listeners of the Big Ball broadcast know, Dragon Ball is in development over at Fox. It's shooting mostly in Durango, Mexico, a little bit in Canada. It's got a pretty quirky, diverse cast, and now we've got someone else listed here. Let's find out who. We've got the roles of Goku and Piccolo cast. Now comes the appearance of MTV reality series The Real World's Jamie Chung, who has just signed on to play Chi-Chi in the live-action adaptation of Dragon Ball. Is this good? I don't know. I watched The Real World the first couple seasons. I can't really testify whether this is a good choice or not. We don't even know if the script is any good or not. James Wong is directing and doing the script. You know, he comes from X-Files, and he is also behind the Final Destination movies. And you've got Kung Fu Hustle's producer kind of backing this, and you've got you know, some good effects work and martial artist effects team kind of working on it. So I just don't know. Chi-Chi, it's a little nuts. I haven't personally heard or seen of Jamie Chung, so I don't know that it's necessarily big casting news. It's just like, there it is.
I've seen pictures of her online. It's a weird thing. I think a lot of people, including us both, are a little apprehensive about this film being made. What else is new? We seem real cynical when it comes to film. Chi-Chi, not a big character. The franchise isn't going to hinge on who they cast in that role. It's a lot of confusion, though, on whether or not this is a Dragon Ball or a Dragon Ball Z movie, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, well, if you believe what's been written in some circles about the script where Piccolo is the villain, then that's a Dragon Ball movie, not a Dragon Ball Z, so.
Right, and I know that they've referred to Jamie Chung as Goku's love interest while growing up, so sounds more and more like a Dragon Ball movie. Again, I can't be too critical about this casting news because the film isn't going to hinge on this one character's portrayal. I'm more concerned about some of the other casting rumors. But it's going to be a big wait and see, at least until a trailer comes out.
Yeah, and there are two trailers online now. Check our show notes for links to Prince Caspian and Speed Racer. Let's start with Speed, shall we? Andy and Larry Wachowski from The Matrix, and also a producer credit on V for Vendetta, are directing this remake of the classic anime Speed Racer. And it stars Emil Hirsch in the title role, Christina Ricci as Trixie, Matthew Fox as Speed's not-so-secret brother, Racer X, Susan Sarandon and John Goodman as his parents, and Korean pop star Rain as rival driver Taijo Togokan. So check the link in the show notes and watch this trailer if you haven't already, or you'll see it attached to the Golden Compass or other films if you go to the theaters this weekend. My first impression from watching the trailer is, wow, Spy Kids 3D.
Ah! Yeah, and my first impression was, Batman and Robin, can we add more neon to this film?
Nipples on the Batsuit.
Nipples on Racer X, what the hell?
Oh my God, yeah. Ooh, I mean, it just hurt. Those oversaturated colors were just like, you want to like shade your eyes.
I was literally looking away from the screen while watching the trailer. Of the 2 minutes, I probably caught a minute of it because it really is sensory overload. I understand the Wachowskis' intent here to really try to bring an animated film look to a live-action film, but it just seems so over the top. And at first, I wasn't too concerned about casting like John Goodman and Susan Sarandon, but watching the trailer, it seems so campy. And I know that's really going to be the feel of the film, although they try their best to inject a lot of seriousness into it. It's probably going to make money out of hype alone. I'm sure it's a film that, as it gets closer to release, the television's going to be saturated with commercials and there's going to be all kind of posters and billboards out. But after watching the trailer, it just left a icky taste in my mouth.
And I know that most people would like roll their eyes at any argument a critic of the Speed Racer trailer would say. It's like, yeah, but it's too over the top. So, well, yeah, well, so was the cartoon. It's like, yeah, but the effects look cheesy. Yeah, well, so was the cartoon. So you get everything thrown back in your face. Yes, it's a cheesy cartoon, but from a movie perspective, I think the CG looks overly CG. Again, it brings Spy Kids 3D to my mind where, you know, you have every background is fake. It's just green screened a la 300, but at least 300 looked cool.
Yeah, when you want to take an existing product and bring it to the big screen, you really want to enhance the best aspects of that property. And, you know, kind of like what you said, they looked at everything that made Speed Racer bad and really exemplified it.
Yeah, and just amped it up. I mean, you've got the swirling backgrounds that are a staple of anime. You've got that there, but it's obvious that the real live-action people aren't there. You can tell that they're green-screened. There's something, I mean, the blending process didn't seem to mesh real well. And all the race scenes, it just looks like something straight out of a video game.
It does, and where normally that would sound really cool, after watching the trailer, you realize it wasn't too cool.
Yeah, now, I mean, this is the first trailer, and we've been wrong about trailers before. You could watch a trailer and think it's the most awesome kick-ass thing you've ever seen, and then go watch the final product, and it's total crap. But I could be saying something different by the time this rolls around in theaters. I hope I do. I mean, I'd like to think that they'd do something good with this much money spent on it, but at least from this initial offering, I'm like, next?
Yeah, I'm totally pessimistic on this. Totally.
Yes. But you guys, make sure and email or send an MP3 comment to thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com and let us know what you think about the Speed Racer trailer. Also, your thoughts on Prince Caspian. This is the second film in the Chronicles of Narnia. Some people call it Lord of the Rings Light. this one has the kiddos returning to the fantastic land created by C.S. Lewis. And only a year has passed on Earth, but more than a millennium has gone by in Narnia. A wicked king now rules the country, and no one has seen the noble lion Aslan in eons. Now, I saw the trailer, and I thought it looked pretty darn good, pretty impressive. It looks like they've amped up the effects, and the story looks cool for what I've heard is the most boring of the Narnia novels.
Yeah, I mean, love it or hate it, the history behind this, it's almost of Harry Potter mythical legends. I mean, it's going to make an assload of money in the theaters. And it's one of those things where you can debate it, love it or hate it. It's something that's been around for a while. This is where you actually get a hard time for me to argue about taking something old and bringing it to the screen, because we really haven't had this type of visual representation of the Narnia books. And I never really read any of the Narnia books, so I'm going into this cold. And I did kind of enjoy the first one. I do understand that they're gearing it more towards children, because let's face it, it's the most brilliant marketing you can do. If you target a film towards a younger audience, then mommy and daddy have to go with the kid as well, so you're getting three ticket sales out of, you know, normally one. Mm-hmm. So I certainly can't fault them there. I was a little disappointed graphically with the first one. I thought some of the CG just looked blatantly CG. But we've come a long way since, and I kind of have some higher expectations for this film, and I will go check it out. It's one of those films where you go, yeah, the second Narnia is coming out. Okay, yeah, I'll be there. And I hope for the best.
Yeah, kind of like the next time a Harry Potter movie comes out, and they're all pretty much the same to me. I don't think there's any one that just stands out as the most kick-ass Harry Potter film. It'll probably be the same with this one. I'm intrigued enough to go see it. I'll go see it in the theater. I don't know if I'll be crazy about it. The first one's enjoyable, but, you know, I like Lord of the Rings a lot better, but, you know, that's a completely different feel. It's a different material. It's not even meant for mainstream family consumption like this is.
Right. Being a mainstream family film coming to us from Disney, you know this thing's going to make ass loads of money.
Oh, yes. Ass lands of money. OMG. Yeah, and these films are coming out. I'm pretty excited about 2008. We've got some big movies coming out. You've got, well, starting out in January, depending on your opinion about monster movies, you've got Cloverfield. We got Iron Man coming out. We've got Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Great Gookamookas, or whatever it's called. You got the new Batman. You got a new Bond, a new Potter, at least coming out 2008, 2009 for those, or something like that. So a lot of big competition out there. Any of these films intrigue you, like, the most?
I don't know. Like, this past year seemed to me like it really should have been Hollywood's high point. With, you know, Spidey 3 coming out, Pirates of the Caribbean 3, Transformers, it seemed really aggressive. Yeah, there's some decent flicks coming out. I'm excited about Iron Man. And here's a movie so far that has sold me graphically, which is something that, you know, I usually bash in the podcast. Can effects make a film? Well, after watching the Iron Man trailer, I was pretty impressed by that. And even though I'm a big Marvel buff, I'm not necessarily a big Iron Man fan. I think I'll definitely go check that out, just because I really like the way the suit looks, and I really like the way that they incorporated a lot of the special effects. The other things, Potter, I'm at the point now where I'm very take it or leave it. I don't mind waiting for the DVDs. Batman, though, you know, I've been talking about that last few podcasts. I can't say enough about that. Heath Ledger's Joker gets me all excited.
Yeah, there's some new publicity stills online. Check them out. And, I'm a little hard-pressed to find anyone who's not digging the Joker's look.
Oh, yeah, really maniacal, really sinister, not campy at all like Jack Nicholson's portrayal. I know Nicholson's pissed off that he wasn't contacted to reprise the role, but, you know, it's like, hey, we're trying to make a good movie this time.
Pissed off? How old is Jack Nicholson now?
I think he's older than Harrison Ford.
Oh, my.
He's dust.
Totally, man. That's crazy.
But yeah, I mean, definitely Indiana Jones 4, especially with the new publicity stills that have come out and everything, and to see that Ford's walking around on his own. He doesn't have a walker with him or in a wheelchair. Hey, as long as Ford's on his 2 feet, you got my ticket sale.
Yeah. And, well, you know, this year it came out of left field, and I didn't expect it, but Transformers was probably one of my favorite movies of the year. I was really impressed by it. And director Michael Bay has now come out on his infamous blog and regarding a conspiracy theory regarding the state of high definition. We've got the format war, right? Blu-ray and HD DVD. And this rolls back, roll out, as Optimus Prime would say, when Transformers was about to roll out on DVD, Paramount made the decision to go HD DVD exclusive. And Michael Bay was crying foul when that happened, and he's a Blu-ray supporter. And then next day, he changed his story, totally retracted his statement, and said, HD DVD rocks! And then a while passed, and he changed his stance yet again, went back to supporting Blu-ray, knocking HD. Now he's saying, and see if you agree about this, Steve, Microsoft support for HD DVD is just a front, and that they really want both high-def formats to fail. On Michael Bay's blog, he said it boils down to corporate politics. He says Microsoft wants the world to move to digital downloads. And with them backing HD and getting Paramount to endorse it for $100 million, it's a sign that both formats will cancel each other out. What do you think about that?
Well, first, I find it a little ironic that he would front so much of the blame on Microsoft when it seems that Apple's the one who's really pushing for the digital downloads.
Exactly.
You know, why not come out and say, well, it's Apple's fault? Bay is a very weird character, and I know when he posted initially about Transformers coming out on HD and not Blu-ray, he admitted he had had a few drinks before he posted. I think the boy's been hitting the sauce a little too hard. He's getting really conspiratorial. I don't even know if he's in a position to be in the know so much to come out and make such bold statements. Yeah, I guess the conspiracy side of me can't agree with him, but the realist in me goes, Bay, just shut the hell up and keep making your movies before you get blacklisted by Hollywood and don't make any more movies.
Now, from his blog, I'll quote here. He says, quote, "That is the dirty secret no one is talking about. That is why Microsoft is handing out $100 million checks to studios to just embrace HD DVD and not the leading and superior Blu-ray. They want confusion in the market until they perfect the digital downloads. Time will tell, and you will see the truth," unquote.
Well, I mean, let's be realist here, okay? We know, realistically, that is going to be the future of how people watch movies and possibly even television. They have no choice. It has to go digital. I don't think anybody's making any false statements when it comes to that. So what he's saying is a half-truth, where that is going to be the eventuality, but to make it so conspiratorial, and this coming from a huge conspiracy theorist, I think it's really paranoid for him to say that. And again, I just can't believe he's willing to run his mouth and shoot himself in the feet so much. Maybe he can use Harrison Ford's walker in a wheelchair soon. I don't understand it, and I want to know what his motivations are for making all these statements, because that's one thing he really hasn't justified. He hasn't said, I'm saying this because. Is there some personal issues going on in the background? Is it about some palms getting greased and not his? I don't know, because, again, it seems like career suicide to take such a bold stand on these topics.
Well, you know, apparently he believes that, you know, the stalemate in the format war is going to stall, you know, sales of the players and the software, and then, you know, it'll boost interest in the high-def content that the companies such as Microsoft offer. Like, okay, the one thing that may support his theory is that you can go to Xbox Live right now and download high-definition movies, you know, for cheap.
But you know what? You're not going to hear a single complaint from me about that, because this is what I've been begging for years. I think it's wonderful. I want to see more of it happen. You know, screw this conspiracy crap. If Blu-ray and HD failed tomorrow and my only alternative was digital downloads, I'd be one happy camper. I wouldn't have to worry about buying players and paying tons and tons of money for discs to, you know, collect dust on my shelf. I'm all for that. I don't know. Maybe this ties in a little bit with the writer's strike, with the whole getting paid for digital content angle going on. I don't know if that's maybe a potential concern of his. It should be about what's going to generate sales? What's going to keep the consumers happy? What's going to be a really enjoyable high-def format? It shouldn't be about people really choosing one over the other, because they're both, you know, competing formats. If HD sucked, Blu-ray would have blown them out of the water by now, and vice versa. I don't know. I think Bay's a little paranoid.
Yeah, and Microsoft, of course, denies these rumors, saying that HD DVD was chosen because of its interactive capability and some other technical qualities. But in the end, 1080p, high-resolution, high-def video is what you get on both formats. The difference comes in, okay, right now HD DVD has the interactive on their side. Blu-ray has uncompressed audio and more storage space on their side. And then it comes down to what studio is backing what side. But in the end, I mean, video quality, it's the same.
Yeah, and in the end, the movies end up on BitTorrent anyway, which certainly aren't HD, so just be happy that people are buying your movies in some HD format as it exists now anyway.
Exactly. I want the format war to end. Now, I own a 360 and a PS3, and I buy movies on both formats, but I want it to end because I know it causes consumer confusion. You know, people have been guilty of, not guilty in a bad way, but like ignorantly purchasing a high-def disc and not knowing any better and getting home and finding out that it doesn't play on their player and they're asking why.
I guess more importantly, now, you're the prime candidate to pitch this question to. Where you are supporting both at this time, when one fails, what does that mean for you?
Well, that means I've got one player that will only play the movies I've purchased so far. And hopefully the studios have enough smarts to sign on with the one who wins. At this rate, I think Blu-ray is the superior one. But my hands are tied because Universal only, and now Paramount, only support HD DVD. So if Indiana Jones trilogy comes out on high def, it will not come out on Blu-ray.
So now, do you kind of cringe at the thought that once one dies, you're going to have to replace those films on the other format?
Well, I'm not so sure I would necessarily have to, as long as my player still works, you know?
Well, I mean, understandably, but I mean, right now, you know, your HD playback is through the peripheral on the 360.
Right.
If HD dies, then, you know, you're not going to ever have an HD standalone player or whatever. You're going to have to keep using the 360. When the next incarnation of the Microsoft gaming console comes out, and if HD is dead, then needless to say, they'll no longer support it. Will you break out an antique console to watch those HD movies, or will you break down and repurchase those movies on Blu-ray?
I don't really know. It's hard to say. It's kind of like every Laserdisc owner. Are they still holding on to their Laserdisc players or their Betamax players? Did they ever end up replacing? It's just a personal choice, and it becomes a very expensive one, too, because now all these classic movies are coming out in high def, and I'm a collector, and I love these movies, and yes, I already own them on DVD, but if I have the money, yeah, I'll go ahead and spend it and buy it again. Sometimes I've been guilty of buying the double-dipped Ultimate Edition version, even though I already own it, and I do it again when the high def comes out, because I want it in high def.
And the reason I brought that all up is because I think that's what confuses, that's what, leads to the bulk of the confusion in the marketplace, is that uncertainty. Do I want to go out and buy a bunch of movies on HD DVD to only find out, say, next year, HD is no longer going to be supported? You know, do I really want to triple dip because I've bought these movies on DVD? I'm going to go out and buy them on HD, and then do I have to go out again and repurchase them on Blu-ray? I understand technology is going to keep moving forward and there's always going to be new formats, but to have three formats on the market all simultaneously, we didn't have this going on during the beta and VHS days. You know, you only had those two competing formats, but have three competing formats with nobody really talking about compatibility, meaning say HD loses out, Blu-ray wins. Will Blu-ray players support playback of the HD movies? Probably not. So, yeah, you know, for me, for the time being, I'm going to keep buying the safe bet, which is standard DVD. I'm not getting all the bells and whistles, but I know that that format's going to be around for a while longer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you've got dual format players available, but they're still like at least a grand. And you also have the high def exclusivity with Universal and Paramount. Those were bought and paid for. So you got to ask yourself, are the studios really supporting it because of that? Or is it just money? Is it just a payoff? It's a bribe.
Right, which of course was part of B's first rant, was the reason Paramount went ahead and made the decisions they made is because people got paid to make those decisions. And I don't know, to come back to Bay, I think he's just crying because he's not getting fat checks in the mail.
Oh, I think he's getting plenty of fat checks. Transformers was one of the biggest films of the year.
Then why bitch, you know? Why become a target?
Well, you know, it's his blog and he's stating his opinion. So, I mean, I can see how things could get blown out of proportion. I don't know if he's necessarily trying to raise a stink about it. Maybe someone asked him and this is his response.
Well, somebody did ask him and that was his response. And I don't want to keep beating a dead horse or a dead Michael Bay. It just seems asinine. You got such a good thing. There was so much volatility in Hollywood, and they're willing to throw you these multi-million-dollar projects. I'd just shut up and smile. I'd look pretty for the cameras, you know?
Yeah. Well, we're doing a lot of smiling right now in another nice long episode of the Big Bald Broadcast. We've got a few random stories to finish up this episode with, and Steve, take it away.
All right, this one came out of left field, really random. Trading cards seem to be making a huge comeback. As I announced in last week's podcast, we have the Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls trading card set come out in February. Well, coming up before that, January 2008, we actually have some Family Guy trading cards. Very weird. Just to really make this seem even more random, it's not just about the Family Guy series. This goes along with the Blue Harvest special they did, which was a parody of Star Wars. So, tied to the DVD release of the fan favorite episode, Inkworks will be releasing the Family Guy Presents Episode 4 A New Hope trading cards, which finds Peter, Lois, Chris, Stewie, Brian, and some of Kellogg's finest in the middle of George Lucas's beloved science fiction epic. With a retro feel and hilarious fun, this 50-card set will be loved by Family Guy and Star Wars fans alike. Look for several levels of randomly inserted bonus cards, including A New Hope, which is a 9-card puzzle that features painted artwork of Chris Griffin as Luke Skywalker, Stewie Griffin as Darth Vader, and more. And is 9 cards in that chase set, inserted approximately 1 in 7 packs. We also have Spaceships and Transports, 9 die-cut foil cards featuring the ships and transports from the show. And that's about 1 in every 9 pack. What happens next? 6 foil cards featuring the hysterical punchlines you didn't get to see in the original film. And that's 1 in every 11 packs, 6 cards in that one. Scenes from Space, 6 cards that enable you to create your own Family Guy scenes. Mix and match 3 clear cards over the 3 background sceneries for different scenes. 6 cards, approximately 1 in 11 packs. Droid Chat, 3 holographic cards with the hilarious exchanges between Quagmire as C-3PO and Cleveland as R2-D2. 3 cards inserted, approximately 1 in every 23 packs. And then we have the rarest of all the chase cards, which is Evil Empire. It's 1 foil chase card, and is only 1 card per shipping case. The manufacturer set its retail price is $2.99 a pack. They're also going to be offering 199 9-card uncut sequentially numbered limited edition mini press sheets that will be available for $69.95 each. To cap things all off will be the Family Guy Presents Episode 4 A New Hope Collector's Album with a suggested manufacturer's retail price of $19.95.
It kind of takes me back nostalgic wise because I used to collect trading cards and I would spend a fortune on them. I would buy like a box and then of course be stuck with like 2 or 3 and a quarter sets of the basic cards. And then I'd get whatever came in the box as the limited cards. And then I'd go to comic shops and try to hunt down, you know, the really limited ones. And then you're paying, you know, $15-$20 a pop for those. And then on top of that, the collector's album to stick them in. So it's quite an investment.
It is. To echo what you said, I do miss that from my childhood. I miss getting the trading cards. I really enjoyed the Dragon's Lair trading cards. I love the Empire Strikes Back cards. I don't know if you remember those, Kyle, but those are like 3x5 or 5x7. They're like really big cards. Those are awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Here's hoping these aren't packed with really nasty, stale, rock hard bubblegum.
Yeah, that's luckily a trend that went away. Folks of the Big Ball Broadcast may know that I do a little voice acting and I play a role on Naruto as Kiba, aka Doggy Boy. And this is kind of interesting that the show is still pretty darn popular.
Yes, apparently it is. According to CNET, the Naruto ninja manga and anime franchise was 4th on an unofficial list of the most popular searches in the Yahoo search engine for the year. In previous years, Yahoo had officially announced the list, but it is now only releasing the top searches grouped by specific trends such as news stories, environmental searches, or consumer callbacks. Nevertheless, a Yahoo executive provided the 10 most popular search terms over to the CNET reporter. No manga or anime franchise appeared in Yahoo's list of the top 10 overall searches from 2003 to 2006, or in Google's top 10 searches for those same years. Naruto placed 2nd on this year's list for the most searched toys and games, as compiled by one of Yahoo Search's competitors, Lycos.
So when people say this is the new Dragon Ball Z, I think it's pretty much the case, right?
Apparently so. I was really surprised, actually, to see Naruto up there so high. I guess only because Death Note came out so late in the year, and I don't know what's up with Bleach. I thought Bleach would be in there cracking, you know, the top 4 or whatever. But yeah, apparently Naruto, pretty big. Don't think it has anything to do with that Kiba fellow, though.
Absolutely not. Not a damn thing, but I do take great solace in knowing that his action figure is starting to come out now.
As you've proudly displayed in your blogs.
Oh, yeah. I even stole a screen cap from toybiz.com.
No, very cool, very cool. And You know, I guess that it's kind of another one of those indications to the anime industry that if you do have a good property, something the fans consider enjoyable, that, you know, it can continue to be damn profitable.
Woohoo! And lastly, probably a little holiday warning for those who enjoy some wacky tabacky and happen to live at home.
Rather than give you my take on it, what I'll do is I'm going to read this letter verbatim. This is from a dad who posted this, and you'll get the gist of it as I go through this. So the letter goes like this. So I spent who knows how many hours of my life trying to get Guitar Hero 3 for the Nintendo Wii for my 15-year-old son, who has been begging for it since he was born. Well, not really, but he's wanted it for a while. So after waiting in long lines and going to every store in the city over the last 2 weeks, practically being laughed at when I asked for a Guitar Hero 3, I finally got in luck at my local EB Games. They just got a shipment 25 minutes before I walked in. So I was so relieved that I finally got the holy grail of Christmas presents pretty much in the nick of time. I couldn't wait to spread the jubilation to my son. Then yesterday I came home from work early, and what do I find? My innocent little boy smoking pot in the backyard with two of his delinquent friends. Now I know Santa applies the naughty or nice paradigm to determine who gets what on Christmas. My son, Isaac, hasn't exactly been Mother Teresa this year. He gets suspended for fighting in the spring, among other things. But I thought I could still justify getting this as his present. Maybe make him stay home more and rock out on his fake guitar thing. He pretty much spends all his free time at his friend's house playing it anyways, while high on marijuana, I would imagine. Anyways, I am now finding it hard to justify rewarding him with this gift after he has so greatly disappointed me. I know smoking a joint isn't exactly the end of the world, but if you can convince me that he deserves the gift, I will end the auction. You will have to be very convincing. I am an elementary school teacher, and I know that rewarding bad behavior is just asking for more of the same. After I caught him getting high on the patio, I did the typical yelling, screaming, kicking out of the friends, etc., but I had not decided on a suitable way to punish him. As of the time of me writing this, he does not know I got him Guitar Hero 3. I will show him the auction once it's posted, and we can watch it finish together. Sort of a father and son bonding experience. While I doubt this will keep him from ever smoking pot again, I think this will make him think twice before doing illegal, well, I think pot's still illegal in Canada, drugs on my property. I am still considering getting him a game for his Nintendo. Maybe something like Barbie as the Island Princess or Dancing with the Stars. These games are in stock everywhere I go, and I know that he will just love them. Merry Christmas, Isaac. I hope you've learned your lesson, Father. So, I know I really didn't set it up properly, but Daddy took Guitar Hero 3 and put it up on eBay as punishment for catching his son smoking pot. I think that's an incredibly creative way to drive your point home.
Go, Dad.
Now, you know, Kyle, you and I, both parents, me relatively new, you for a little while now. What do you think of this? Do you think that Daddy's actions are justified?
Yeah. I mean, why not? I mean, the guy spent money, and he might as well see a nice return on it.
This auction is still active on eBay. I hope it still is when this podcast goes up. The dad has posted a few updates. He said at first his son didn't believe him, and then he sat down at the computer and showed his son the auction, just watched his jaw hit the floor and his eyes well up with tears. But the offer still stands. If you can convince Dad otherwise, he'll take the auction down and give Guitar Hero 3 to his son. But he's been getting quite a few bids, and it's gone over the retail price so much so now that he's offering free shipping on this item. So, I don't know. Doesn't look like Isaac's getting a Guitar Hero 3 for Christmas.
And think about this. How much crap he's going to get the rest of his life because it got posted and spread on the World Wide Web. And here we are talking about it on the podcast, and I'm sure it's being talked about on other ones too.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, this is another one of those internet viral things reminiscent of, like, the Star Wars kid, where it's just a matter of time. I'm sure somebody may have done it already where, you know, crazy, wacky internet technology where you can track down who this person is, what school they go to, what neighborhood they live in, and all that. So I'm sure we're going to get more details about who this accused, evil, vile marijuana smoker is. Yeah, his life is taking quite the sour twist over taking the hit off a twist.
So, yeah, see why this is genius?
Although, you know, as we've stated over and over throughout this podcast, I am a conspiracy theorist, and part of me wonders if this is even a real story. It's a brilliant marketing device to sell Guitar Hero 3 on eBay right before Christmas and get more than retail for it. It certainly sparked a big debate about how parents should react when their kids do something like this. So even if it is a hoax in the end, I love the story behind it. It's absolutely brilliant, and it's definitely going to go down in internet history.
Was this kid really brought to tears over Guitar Hero 3? I mean, Rock Band maybe, you know, because it's like nearly $200. Guitar Hero is like much cheaper.
It's still the thing, though. And when you're 15 years old, you know, you have a very limited income. I don't know if he has a job or whatever, perhaps gets an allowance, maybe a paper route, you know, so it's kind of hard to obtain these things.
Yeah, he makes enough to obtain a dime bag, apparently.
Well, you know, it's his delinquent friends, too. Who knows who actually provided the narcotics?
Yes.
But, yeah, a lot of people really supporting Dad. There's like 3 or 4 pages of responses to the eBay auction and just people chiming in and weighing their opinions. If anything, I'm glad that it's opened up the debate. And, you know, it certainly helps me because I know that's something I'm going to encounter in the future. And I'm open to suggestions on how to handle that situation. And I think this is something I'm always going to keep in the back of my mind.
Remember that kid and the whole web knew about it. And yeah, he never lived it down, ever.
Well, I'll tell you what, if anything, it gave parents a bunch of ammunition just to have that threat available. Exactly what you said, you know, your kid acts up and goes, hey, remember that kid who had his Christmas present sold on eBay? Do you want to be the next kid that happens to?
Yes.
So, fair listeners to the Big Ball Broadcast, if you're a minor and you're living at home with mommy and daddy, my advice would be, at least don't get caught smoking pot unless you want to see your Christmas presents go on eBay.
And then talked about it on the podcast and the World Wide Web. All right, we dug around, and actually we do have one more story before we hit stop on the record button here on the Big Ball Broadcast. It's about Nokia and their brand new gadget.
Announced at the annual Nokia World Conference, Come With Music will enable customers to buy a Nokia device with a year of unlimited access to, quote, millions of tracks, and, rather surprisingly, get to keep those tracks once the 12-month period ends. Of the 4 major labels, however, Universal Music is the only one to have signed on. Nokia gave no further details regarding the cost of Comes With Music Ready handsets or in which regions the service will eventually become available. And now comes the shocking news, of course, we're all waiting for this. Comes With Music will employ Windows DRM. Now, what does this mean to consumers? Well, while customers will be able to keep any downloaded tracks even after the free subscription period ends, the service will employ Windows DRM, meaning that music can only be played on a PC or, presumably, a compatible Nokia device. If you own an iPod or a Zune, you're out of luck. Secondly, tracks can only be transferred to one PC and one registered Nokia device at a time. Third, music can be burned to CD, but only after paying an additional upgrade fee per track. Fourth, Universal's participation with Nokia's Comes With Music offering is part of the label's Total Music Plan, whereby the cost of a music subscription is absorbed into the price of a supported device. And absolutely worst of all, this one I just really shake my head at. Once the 12-month period ends, the only way to continue subscribing is to purchase a new Comes With Music Nokia device.
Ew!
Now, personally, I foresee nothing but utter failure. I think it's a really bad business model if the devices are designed to become obsolete and disposable.
Yeah, this sounds like the next big bomb since the N-Gage for Nokia.
Well, I mean, at least with the N-Gage, if you bought the games, you could continue to play it on the device. They didn't, like, expire in a year and you had to go buy a new N-Gage. I can't believe what a disposable consumerist society we've become where companies like Nokia and Universal say, after a year, throw it away and buy another one. I'm just really, really blown away by that revelation.
And you've only got Universal signed on, so if your favorite artists aren't on other labels, you're out of luck.
Yeah, you can't download or import any other tracks from any other label onto this device right now where it's only strictly Universal.
So we talk about Otherworld Steve and his big hairy butt all the time, but this one's got the biggest butt of all.
It does. I mean, I understand iPods are still kind of expensive, and people baby these things. You got all the socks and holders and this and that for them, because God forbid you even get a scratch on your iPod. you want to take care of it because it's something you can have for a long time. And of course, having the option to put whatever music you want in there from different labels, granted that you buy them legitimately through the Apple iTunes store for 99 cents. But to buy a device, to have limited track availability, and then have it disposable after a year, if it's more than $100, I can't see this thing ever taken off on the market.
I think all those arguments about, you know, in the, just stating the DRM factor and this, like, oh, yeah, you could burn it to CD if you pay the upgrade fee for each song.
For each track. And right now, of course, you know, Nokia nor Universal are saying what those fees may be. Again, to have the cost of the music subscription absorbed into the price of the device, I don't know how much this thing's going to cost, because that's really been one of the big debates out there about artist rights and making sure they're compensated fairly for their music. And of course, the labels, you know, being as money hungry as ever, really want to make sure they get that fair market value for the music. I don't know. I foresee an incredibly expensive, probably ugly device, and I really can't get over this after the year is up. The thing's useless. I don't know. I'm like at a total loss for words here.
Well, a lot of people tend to buy new phones every year anyway. Not most, but and it depends on what price point this comes out at, which they haven't announced, right?
Right. You know, we don't know if we're going to have some bigger fiasco, like with the iPhone coming out and being locked to one subscriber and not being able to unlock it because it's going to nail you with a firmware update. So as bad as this all sounds right now, I think it can do nothing but just get worse as they announce more of these things.
Ugh, yeah, that's crazy. Crazy go nuts. Well, you've listened to this very, very long episode of the Big Bald Broadcast, and you're merely going, hey, how come they haven't talked about the anime debate, the whole industry, bootlegging, piracy? They spent like half an hour on it last time. How come not even one single mention? Well, folks, we had so much content and so much feedback from listeners that we're going to make it its own episode. So on the next episode of Big Bald Broadcast, we are going to totally dedicate it to feedback from you, our loyal listeners or new listeners, with your opinions about the anime industry, the state of the industry. Is bootlegging and piracy killing it? Do you download fan subs? Do you do the fan subbing yourself? What are your opinions about the industry? Are they ripping you off with high-priced DVDs? Where do you see the anime industry in the next few years? We want to know your opinions about this, and we will read your emails on the air, but we especially want, if you have a microphone, record yourself, record your thoughts, and we will play them on the episode.
Right, and as you mentioned last week, Kyle, if you are downloading anime illegally, we certainly do want to hear from you. We want a very transparent debate here on the topic. We want to know your motivations for doing it. We will respect you, and if you wish to remain anonymous, we will certainly make that so. Don't fear any repercussion for speaking your mind. So certainly do get in touch with us. Share your most honest opinions, because the only way we're going to even come close to settling this issue is to be very honest about it. And we will keep it anonymous, and guaranteed next episode of the podcast is going to be very lively.
Absolutely. If you want your name out there, throw it on there. If you don't, then don't include it. But we do want to hear it. Whatever your opinion is, whatever it is on any aspect of this whole bootlegging piracy issue, because it is a hot topic right now. So what you need to do is preferably record your thoughts and send it in MP3 format. Or if you're a little too shy, that's okay. We'll read your email. You can send it to thebigballbroadcast@gmail.com. And our next episode will be an exclusive special episode dedicated entirely to listener feedback.
And I'm really looking forward to it. It's an incredibly interesting topic. And yeah, we've got a lot of really, really good feedback so far, but the more the merrier. We really, really want to put it out there. We need the fans to talk about this. So, you know, we know the fans of the podcast are fans of anime. Certainly share those opinions with us.
It's probably going to be our final episode of the year, because here we are. It's already December. We don't get to record too terribly often, so we want to take this time to thank you for listening to the Big Bald Broadcast. And of course, it keeps going because you are listening to it. So thank you for downloading, and please, please, please give us your feedback. We will post it and read it on the air on our next episode.
And give us your money. We have a PayPal link, and I believe somebody actually listened to our pleas.
Yes, yeah, this they did. Let's give a big shout out and congratulations and thank you to Quinn from Arlington, Texas. There is a PayPal link on our blog page, and we're not asking for a lot of money, folks. If you can toss a dollar or two or whatever, we provide the show for free. We edit it for free. We put it out there for free. We never get a paycheck for any of this. There's no kickback. So if you like what you hear, throw some money in. It may help, you know, pay for the domain to pay to keep the website running, to, you know, that sort of thing.
So, yes, big thanks to Quinn. Thank you for helping us keep this podcast alive.
That's right. And Quinn has chimed in with the thought about the anime. We're going to get to her email and your emails and MP3 thoughts on the next episode of the Big Ball Broadcast. So until next time, this is Kyle Hebert.
And this is Otherworld Steve.
See ya.
That was